Isabel. In 1994, thanks in large part to the recent collapse of the Soviet Union and the ongoing U.S. embargo against trade with Cuba, hungry citizens of Havana rioted up and down the Malecon. In response, Cuban President Fidel Castro announced that anyone who wanted to leave Cuba could do so without being thrown in jail, which was the usual punishment for trying to escape. It was a strategy Castro had employed before. When protests threatened to overwhelm his security forces and overthrow his government, Castro would allow people to leave any way they could, usually on homemade boats and rafts. When all the people angry enough to fight him had fled to America, the protests would stop and things would settle back down again. In the 5 weeks in 1994 when Castro allowed unhappy citizens to leave Cuba, an estimated 35,000 people fled the island for the United States, almost 10 times the number of people who had tried to escape to America in all of 1993. Many Americans objected to the sudden influx of Cuban refugees, particularly because, at the time, Cubans enjoyed a unique path to becoming American citizens that immigrants from other countries did not. Others recognized Castro's ploy for what it was and argued that the protesters should remain in Cuba in the hope that their riots would finally overthrow the Cuban government. U.S. President Bill Clinton had a big decision to make: let the Cuban refugees in or send American warships out to turn them away. While he tried to figure out what to do, Clinton ordered any Cuban refugees caught at sea to be sent to a refugee camp at the U.S. military base at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. From there, Cuban refugees could choose to return to Cuba or wait and see if the United States or another country would take them. A few months later, in 1995, Clinton announced that the Cuban refugees at Guantanamo would be allowed entry into the United States. But from that point on, any Cuban refugees caught at sea would be sent back to Cuba, not taken the rest of the way to Florida or sent to Guantanamo. Any Cuban refugees who made it to America could stay. Isabel and her family refer to this new attitude toward Cuban refugees as wet foot, dry foot, though that name wasn't commonly used to describe the situation until the policy was officially made law in 1995. I've also used artistic license to combine the riot that prompts Isabel's family to leave with the U.S. decision to detain Cuban refugees caught at sea. Those two events actually happened a month apart, but I have brought them together here to make my story tighter and more dramatic. Despite the threat of imprisonment in Cuba and the dangers of sea swells, storms, drowning, sharks, dehydration, and starvation, increasing numbers of Cubans still try to cross the 90 miles of ocean between Havana and Florida each year. According to the Pew Research Center, 43,635 Cuban refugees entered the United States in 2015, and that number was surpassed in 2016 by October. In recent years, many Cuban refugees have skipped America's wet-foot, dry-foot policy altogether and chosen to fly or sail from Cuba to Mexico or Ecuador and then walk north into America, an alternate route observers nicknamed Dusty Foot. But as more and more countries south of the United States close their borders, more Cubans are heading back into the Straits of Florida on homemade boats and rafts. Again, according to the Pew Research Center, 9,999 Cuban refugees entered the United States through the Miami sector in 2015. That same year, the U.S. Coast Guard apprehended 3,505 Cubans at sea. And there's no way of telling how many Cubans die in the attempt each year. In 1994, the year of Isabel's story, an estimated 3 out of every 5 Cuban refugees who attempted the journey died at sea. In 2014, President Barack Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro, Fidel's brother, announced that Cuba and the United States were reestablishing relations with each other. And in 2015, President Obama announced that formal diplomatic relations between the two countries would resume, including the reopening of their respective embassies in Havana and Washington, D.C. As a part of the normalization of relations, the U.S. government relaxed travel restrictions that had barred most Americans from visiting Cuba. And in August 2016, the first commercial flight from America to Cuba since 1962 landed in Havana. On January 12, 2017, in one of his last acts in office, President Obama announced the immediate end of the wet-foot, dry-foot policy. How these changes to U.S.-Cuban relations and the death of Fidel Castro on November 25, 2016, will affect the future of Cuba and its people remains to be seen.